Are you telling me that the ranging subsystem is down?
That's right. We're trying to find out what's wrong with it and get it fixed. She stood there before him, her face set in an angry frown. Abruptly, she turned to the young lieutenant and commanded, John, you're the tallest guy we've got. Give Mr. Hartunian all the help you can. Lieutenant Sharman got up from his console, his close-cropped hair nearly brushing the overhead. Thank you, Colonel, Harry said.
Get it fixed, Mr. Hartunian.
Harry, he said automatically. Colonel Christopher looked as if she wanted to breathe fire.
Mr. Hartunian, she repeated.
With Lieutenant Sharman's help, Harry unscrewed the plate that covered the ranging laser's mount. The tubular housing for the ranging laser was too tight for Harry to do more than stick his head through the opening. The plane's engines sounded louder up here, the vibrations heavier. It felt cold, too. Harry realized that there was nothing between him and the sub-zero stratosphere out there except a thin sheathing of aluminum. Teetering on a makeshift ladder that Sharman had created by stripping one of the cots for the crew's relief and leaning the metal frame against the bulkhead of the flight deck, Harry wormed one arm up into the shadowy housing and played the beam from his pocket flashlight down the length of the carbon dioxide laser. Everything seemed okay. No loose connections. Seals looked tight. Turning carefully to inspect the forward end of the laser, Harry's heart froze in his chest. The forward lens assembly was gone. Where the fist-sized unit of collimating lenses should have been, there was nothing but a gaping emptiness. Somebody's taken the lens assembly out of the laser, Harry realized. He stared, trembling, at that empty space where the lens assembly should have been. Somebody's taken the lens out of the laser, he repeated to himself. Without the lens assembly, the ranging laser can't work, and without the ranging laser, the big coil can't be aimed properly. The whole system, the whole plane, will be useless. There's a saboteur on the plane. The thought made Harry's knees weak. But there was no other explanation. That lens assembly didn't remove itself from the Ranger. Someone deliberately took it out. Then he remembered the explosion at the test rig, the accident that had killed Pete Quintana and nearly broken his own back. It wasn't an accident, Harry realized. It was deliberate sabotage. By one of my crew. As Harry stood there, wondering what to do, how to handle this terrible new knowledge, he heard Victor Anson's voice in his mind. Make it work, Harry. I'm counting on you. We're all counting on you. Harry Daniel Hartunian. Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, Lehigh University. Harry Hartunian had never been a fighter. He never was a take-charge guy. Instead, he had a quiet, persistent, relentless determination to finish whatever he started. Born and raised in the Boston suburb of Medford, in high school, Harry took a lot of ribbing for his flyaway hair and his passive, almost invisible presence in the classroom and outside. The bullies picked on him, of course. But Harry befriended the biggest guy in the school by offering to do his homework in exchange for his protection. The bullying stopped. And his bodyguard even taught Harry a few moves that were down and dirty, but effective in an emergency. He didn't go out for sports. The mindless pressure to win turned him off. In his sophomore year, Harry made the chess team, barely, but by the time he graduated, he was the best chess player in the school. Engineering appealed to him. Harry liked the idea of building